And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
DirecTV gives you access to apps like Netflix and live sports right next to each other.
I don't get it.
Let me put it in pigeon terms. It's like that one amazing dumpster with the old fruits and cardboard all in one place.
How am I supposed to keep up with illustrative metaphors when you are making me so hungry?
Get live TV and streaming apps together without a satellite. Visit DirecTV.com. Requires high-speed internet-connected Gemini device and separate paid subscription to watch Netflix on DirecTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the TIFO Football Podcast. I'm Joe Devine, and I'm delighted to be joined by Seb Halfords-Floor. Hi, Seb.
Hello, Joe Devine.
How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Good. You're sat right next to John McKenzie. Hi, John.
John McKenzie, I believe.
Yes, John McKenzie. That's yes. Right. And of course, for listeners to the podcast, we're referring to the pun-related jokes that the live chat were making last night. Of course, if you're listening to us, you can also join us live on YouTube in the immediate aftermath of the final game of every game day of the 2022 World Cup in Qatar. Very exciting, isn't it? But you know what else is exciting? We're joined by a special guest today. The reason we've squashed Seb and John together in one close camera shot, as though they weren't special enough to have their own close-up shot, because we have a very special person here. All the way from the Ranks FC podcast, it's Sam Tai. Hi, Sam.
Hello.
How are you doing? All right?
I'm great. It's good to be here.
Well, thanks for coming. You've joined us today to chat and to do a little bit of tactics stuff on the board. So we'll look forward to hearing more from you shortly. And probably by the end of the podcast, being a bit sick of you. But if you want something to get sick of, but it'll take a really long time to get sick of it, that's The Athletic. TheAthletic.com/TIFO. TheAthletic.com/TIFO. The quality's so high that I'm not even sick of it, and I work here. you know, some days, but it's unrelated to the quality of the product, I have to say.
Okay.
And there's a special offer on at the moment, Joe.
You can get The Athletic for £1 per month for 6 months. What an incredible deal. Visit theathletic.com/TIFO, theathletic.com/TIFO. Yeah. But for now, I will leave you in the warm hands and the cool embrace of Sam Tai. All right, ready?
When Sam is sad, he Sam cries.
Okay, that's a pretty good start. Let's see if we can improve that throughout the course of the podcast.
Don't make that your personal mission for the evening.
Once you're sick of him, he'll be Sam Sigh.
Oh, that's
pretty good.
I feel like
pretty
it's a bit good. Too easy to pun on his name, yeah, based on the...
Sounds like so many other things. Yeah. Okay, let's begin. Right, let's start with Brazil 2-0 Serbia. It feels like, I mean, it was quite an interesting game to watch there, quite a fun one. Will you start, though, with helping the uninitiated here? Why are Brazil favourites for the tournament, would you say? I mean, because there's plenty of good teams here.
Lots and lots and lots and lots of really good players. Also, lots of fun players who capture the imagination. Brazil are stacked with attacking talent. Obviously, Neymar is the one that everybody knows. And the player around a lot of this tournament, around whom a lot of this tournament is centered, because it's kind of his last chance, really, to collect the award that he's been expected to win, probably since he was about 16. He's been ever since he was a teenager. Neymar has been the next force in Brazilian football, and I suppose there's different ways of interpreting his career, but it would feel a little bit underfulfilled, unfulfilled, if he weren't to win the World Cup or the Ballon d'Or. Or probably both things, because they generally go together. Mm. But around him, there's an extraordinary collection of talent, which makes him a clear favourite, especially after Argentina's debacle against Saudi Arabia. Yeah. So I think we saw some of it tonight. Neymar came into the game as the story. Richarlison scored probably what will end up being one of the goals of the tournament. Lucas Paqueta is in there. Casemiro is in there. Thiago Silva is still there after all this time. Alexandro. And also... For people who don't watch a lot of Brazil, I think you can gauge an awful lot just by saying they're able to bring off or to bring on Gabriel Martinelli and Gabriel Jesus off the bench into the game. That speaks to a level of strength and depth which not a lot of countries have at this tournament. And actually, I mean, maybe with the exception of Spain, they're probably one of the only favourites, now that we've finished the first round of games, to actually exceed expectations in terms of level of performance. I think they were excellent, really, really well.
Yeah, okay. I mean, it's interesting. Obviously, they beat Serbia 2-0 today. Serbia maybe didn't play brilliantly, but they're a tough team to beat. Thinking about the other big teams in this tournament, yeah. Germany, Argentina losing their opening games, England beating an Iran team that certainly weren't at their best, Spain obviously hammering Costa Rica, who were woeful, as JJ described yesterday. I don't know, John, do you feel like off the first game, Brazil kind of... I mean, they do look like favourites, don't they?
It's hard to say, I think, because they were playing against a low block for a large portion of this game. So it's hard to say how representative that will be of games later on in the tournament. And I think there's been a few funny games so far, namely Germany. The first half of the Germany game, I thought Germany looked incredible in this half because they're playing the closest at that point to what I would describe as a domestic style of play. They were looking to possess the ball. They were looking to move it through the thirds. They were looking to generate dangerous moments through manipulating space. And they looked really, really on it. And then obviously they ended up not winning that game. Spain, similarly, playing a very sort of domestic style of football and doing really well from it. And I suppose the big question is to what extent is the style of play that you're using in the group stages going to translate into what you're doing in the knockout stages when the rubber hits the road? And that's kind of what I feel like with Brazil. In this game, they had to break down a really stubborn team, and it's hard to tell how that will then translate into them playing against teams who are probably going to be trying to play the same sort of style of football as they are as well. So in the group stages, it's really easy to make snap judgments about how good teams are, but I think it's still too early to be able to do that after just one game from each team.
Still, the last 25 minutes of that game where Serbia had to step out a little bit, they could not sit in the low block because they were a goal down. They literally took one player out of their defensive structure and just got rinsed, like absolutely rinsed. So I think it's probably fair to deduce that if you do step out against Brazil, they could just bludgeon you. And what was really impressive tonight was for 65 minutes, they didn't necessarily make too many clear-cut chances. I don't think that they were exactly flowing. But what they did do was just keep a relentless amount of pressure on the opposition. And you are just going to get tired. You will wilt eventually. And when they start to wilt, they bring on Gabriel Jesus, Martinelli, Rodrigo. I mean, how scary is that? Mm. So, you know, Vinicius does the first bit, then Rodrigo comes on, takes the baton, does the next bit, and you will not be able to sit there for 90 minutes and defend against Brazil. But if you open up and play aggressively, it just gives them more space.
You know what I really like about that? It's like some of these substitutions, you bring on ready-made combinations from different clubs. Mm. So you have the option, if you're Brazil, to play Vinicius and Rodrigo as opposite wide forwards. You can bring on Martinelli and Jesus, who play together for club level. And if you think about the context of European football at the moment, where everyone's exhausted, players are being run to the ground, and also, most importantly, these international sides have had 6 days worth of preparation.
Yeah.
If you're able to have that in your team in any form, great. We're able to have it in reserve. What a luxury that is.
Well, you've got Fred and Casemiro as well, who are now playing together.
I was going to say they brought on Anthony and Fred. You missed out the biggest
Anthony
compliment.
Anthony and Fred, absolutely.
Almost a shame McTominay isn't Brazilian.
But these are super important. I was having a conversation with someone earlier today who talked about how the friendlies are the time when you forge these combinations and you develop these understandings within a team, which allow you security and trust within a tournament. Brazil have them. Mm-hmm. They already have them and they don't need that. And I think that's going to be, I don't know, maybe it's one of the reasons why, even though we've seen quite a lot of probably reserve football, I call it, through the first week of the tournament or the first sort of round of games, Brazil already look like they're in a higher gear, which is really interesting.
John, we mentioned a couple of player names already. Can I ask you a question about the starting lineup? It shows what I know, that I was a bit confused why Richarlison started over Gabriel Jesus. Richarlison, obviously, as Seb said, probably scoring maybe the goal of the tournament. But why do you think Chiche made that choice?
Yeah, it's hard to say because actually, if you look at the Brazil lineup, it's a very attacking lineup. So we've got it on the board in front of us here. We saw the two wide players for Brazil just hugging the touchline, so pushing really far out wide, trying to get in behind those wing backs because there is space there against the back three. And then with Richarlison as the nine, then you've got two players who are essentially playing as eights in Neymar and Paquetá. Mm-hmm. I need to pronounce that properly.
Paquetá,
mm-hmm. Yeah. And then only Casemiro is the holding midfielder. It's a really attacking lineup. And I guess this is a really attacking lineup because Chiche expected Serbia to sit quite deep. So the big question is, like, how are you going to break down a lower block? How are you going to come up against these all really tall centre backs. And I guess the options you have are Gabriel Jesus or Richarlison. Now, it may be the case that when you come up against a low block, you might think it would be better to have a player like Gabriel Jesus because he is a bit more of a tight spaces.
He's a wriggler.
A wriggler, yeah. he's the sort of player who can create something out of nowhere. But interestingly enough, in this game, both of the goals came from Richarlison playing box presence nine stuff. So being in the right place to tap in the ball off the goalkeeper.
Which is not normally how I think about him as a player. And obviously he doesn't usually play there for Spurs, given that that's Harry Kane's position. What is it about him that enables him to do that better than Jesus?
Yeah, well, it's interesting that you mentioned him not playing there for Spurs. And that is because they have Harry Kane.
Yeah.
I think that they brought him in because he can replace Harry Kane if Kane isn't available.
Yeah.
And I think that it's his better position. He's also a very hard worker as well. And in certain games, that will be important if they're going to be looking to press a little bit higher. But in terms of the differences between the way that Richarlison plays that role and Kane plays that role, I think, as I've said, it's the big thing is box presence. If you're going to play with your two wide players in basically hugging the touchline, as I've said, and then you've got two more attacking players here, both of whom are quite creative players in Neymar and Paqueta. I said his name wrong again, but you know who I mean.
What are we saying? Paqueta?
Paqueta, I think it is.
Tim Vickery says
there's Paqueta. A still Dilla. Is there not Paqueta. Still Dilla over the...
There's an accent over the last letter.
Yeah.
So.
There you go.
Paqueta.
Paqueta.
Do as I say, not as I do.
Right.
Although that doesn't work in this
okay,
situation.
Okay, Dad.
I'm saying. Where was I at? So you've got these two creative players behind. So perhaps there isn't quite so much of a need for someone like Gabriel Jesus.
Where was I at is also a very damn thing to say, isn't it?
Now, where was I?
I lost my place.
Back into it then.
Yes. What was I just saying? Let me continue my lecture.
Just going back a minute.
Please do though, Dan.
Yeah, so I was saying that the two eights that they've got here in Neymar and Paqueta are a little bit more creative. And so you've got the ability to break down the low block through creativity there to a degree. So maybe Gabriel Jesus wasn't preferred for that reason. But when we've seen Jesus play at Arsenal, yes, he does play in these sorts of roles, but we've seen him drop out, rotate with players like Martinelli. He loves to pick the ball up in this sort of area and make these sorts of runs into the box as well.
Yeah.
And I think that the reason why Chiche will not have gone with him in this first half is simply because he wanted Richarlison to be able to pin this back line back to a degree. You do want someone who's going to be in those sorts of areas so that when you do create, there is someone there to finish. And that's how both of the goals occurred. Right?
But it was a war of attrition, wasn't it? Because like Richarlison was floating in this area. I mean, Serbia, if we just take these guys out for a second here, Serbia set up and Gudel played right in the center here. And in the defensive phase, they were like this, right?
Remember, played, for the audio listeners, you have to describe what you're doing.
They played back five, three in front, and then two up front. It was a 5-3-2 shape. And they packed in. And like they created this kind of like cone shape and blocked the middle of the pitch. So we got Vinicius and Rafinha all the way at the touchline, stretching the pitch as much as possible. But still, there wasn't a lot of space in there. And they were finding it really hard once they got the ball out to Vinicius and out to Rafinha to get it back in. Either to Paqueta or either to Neymar or to Richarlison, feeding that ball back inside. It was so congested and so difficult for them to do. So even though Richarlison was a box presence for them, I think there was still possibly a case there where if you had Jesus instead, so we'll pop him in instead, and had him floating in between the lines or drawing out to the right or left, as you said, and Rafinha maybe dumping a little pass inside and Jesus kind of turning and wriggling through as he so often does, there was still a case for that. I think that still can work, even though he's drawing himself out of the box. It was just really hard for them to play against this Serbia block until they got tired. And Gudel got yellow carded for a silly challenge and got removed. And that destabilized them as well. They lost their anchor in their midfield. So games are 90 minutes and managers, sometimes we forget, like, it's actually really important to use all of your arsenal and to use all of those 90 minutes. And for Brazil in particular, when you have this many players and this much depth, that really comes into play.
Well, let's talk about Serbia then, Seb, because I was quite excited about this game. I think Serbia have got a very fun team. Lots of players I recognise, which really does help.
It's proven
when you're
a vital ingredient so far
World
in the
Cup
tournament.
Do you know, speaking as the normal person here, when I watch a game of football, I don't know any of the players.
Okay.
A bit boring.
I'm the normal here.
Yeah.
You're not the normal. No.
Don't know. What do you think of Serbia, though?
Disappointed.
Yeah?
I think Serbia have been a little bit unlucky in the time of the tournament because they've arrived with a lot of key parts unfit. So Mitrovic didn't look fit. I think you can tell by the way he moves. He's one of those players that has a clear physical tell when he's not quite right. Vlahovic wasn't fit. Luka Jovic, in a different universe, would be one of the world's best players, probably. Isn't, because the Real Madrid move went really badly. One of the world's most dangerous forwards. So they could have three alternating excellent strikers at their disposal. As it is, they've got two half-fit ones and one who's kind of lost his confidence. That's really difficult. Filip Kostic wasn't fit. I think, as with Eintracht Frankfurt prior to his move to Juventus, completely different side when Kostic is on song. He gives you so much from that left-sided position. He covers so much ground. His delivery is really, really good. And I think the best moments Serbia had this evening were probably from set pieces. You saw the kind of the aerial threat they carried, and add Kostic into that mix and the quality of his delivery, and they're a different side. I thought they were reserved. I thought they were a little bit fearful. It was clear to me, I think probably from the first half, you guys might disagree, but it seemed they were very, very happy to draw the game. I mean, they would have been very content to take a 0-0 out of this, which is fine on paper and in theory, because it's Brazil and they're very strong. At the same time, you wouldn't say that Serbia, given what we've seen in this tournament, given the proactive approach and the aggression showed by quote-unquote underdogs, you can damage these teams, particularly in the first game. And they never really tried to do that. Sam said something towards the end of the game where we were talking about how frustrating it is that teams change their approach based on what the score is. And then you see their true selves and you see also like what they're capable of actually doing. And that was a little bit true of Serbia this evening, I thought.
Yeah, okay.
I think it's worth saying as well, this is their hardest game of the group. So I think they came out with that in mind. I talked about Serbia being quite a fun side potentially.
They were not fun.
In terms of the way that they play. And I think we're going to see that hopefully more in the other two games in that group, because they can come out and play in that way against these other two sides and maybe cause more problems. But essentially what was happening in the game was that they were obviously, as we've said, they were sitting deep, and then in certain phases they were just going to try and get the ball forward to Aleksandar Mitrovic to hold it up. And because Brazil only had Casemiro as a holding player, with Neymar and Paquetá in front of him, in theory then there's a lot of space here that's attackable, but because the ball wasn't sticking with Mitrovic at all, it just felt as though they were just never getting the ball into those moments where they could then win the second ball and exploit that central space. I think that they'll be much better at moving the ball in the other two games, and so hopefully, as we watch those games, we'll see a little bit more from them in that respect. But as we said at the beginning of this section, the big question is just how good are Brazil? Because it could be the case that Brazil are the hands and away best team in this group, in which case a 2-0 loss to the best team in the tournament.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, we'll come on to talk about Switzerland, Cameroon a little bit later, who are the two other teams in this group. You mentioned for Serbia, obviously Brazil is their hardest game. I'm curious to hear from you guys a little bit later as for Brazil, whether Serbia is their hardest game in the group or not. But do you agree with what John says about Serbia before we move on, Sam?
I mean, yeah, they had the same first 60 minutes as Wales had the same first half against the USA. They sat really deep, and every time they tried to play the ball forward, it did not stick. Yeah. This was because Mitrovic was probably unfit. He definitely didn't look fit. Wales was because, you know, Dan James couldn't make the ball stick. As soon as they brought on a target man and Kiefer Moore who could make the ball stick, it was fine. Serbia did not appear to have anyone that they could do that, because the guys they turned to, the ball won't stick with Jovic. And Vlahovic is no fitter than Mitrovic because he hasn't played for over a month. So the real difficulty we're here was, and when I talked about that bludgeoning approach from Brazil, this is possible because if the ball never sticks, it just comes back. You cannot play for 90 minutes in that defensive setup, survive five substitutions and several yellow cards and get away with a 0-0. It's not going to be possible against this quality and the waves of attackers that they can bring on.
Yeah. Edward Lawrence in the chat says, lovely analysis from Jampai. So thank you. That's a pretty good one, yeah.
If I could just come back, it is worth saying that what Wales did really well was they pushed their fullbacks further forward.
Yeah.
Now, if you do that in this game, you're leaving Vinicius Junior and Rafinha being marked by the outside centre-backs, and that's...
Yeah.
Much worse than leaving Timothy Weah and Christian Pulisic a little bit more open.
And Serbia were very, very clearly focused on making sure that Vinicius at least had as little room to run through and penetrate as possible.
That's a hard thing to do. Vinicius, I think, is one of those players in a category where he has to be doubled every time he touches the ball, because he's ever so skillful, clearly. He's added goal scoring and creativity to his game over the past probably 18 months to 2 years, but also the speed. Like, he can beat you on either side. You can't just have a single fullback or wingback against him. You just can't do it. And that's a kind of, that feeds into the idea that you can't, like, I don't know. I mean, it's almost encouraging a very negative approach from anybody that faces Brazil, I think, probably going forward.
I think we're probably going to come back to talk about this later as well. And we're going to chat with Sam about his thoughts generally on the tournament. But it is interesting that we've talked about Serbia playing a low block and sitting very deep, because we've seen already in this tournament teams, getting results for doing the opposite of that. Yeah. And I want to hear more about that a little bit later. But for now, unless anybody has anything else they'd like to say about Brazil, zero. I'd like you all to put your headphones on so that we can hear a nice message.
Exciting bit.
To the TIFO audience from James Richardson. Let's have a listen.
Hello, TIFO subscribers. I'm James Richardson, woof. And I'm here to tell you that the Totally Football Show now has its very own YouTube channel. That's right. If you want to join us for clips from our nightly World Cup Totally shows and all the fun and drama from Qatar, just make sure you subscribe to our YouTube channel and we'll see you there.
There we go. That was from James Richardson. We can all take our headphones off now. It's lovely to hear.
He's a very nice man, isn't he?
He's recording his podcast in the next room now. So if you're listening to this now and thinking, oh, I wish there was something to listen to in the morning, it's probably that.
He asked me for my hot takes on Brazil and I didn't give them.
Did he?
Yeah, I'll just keep them here.
I can't imagine he asked you for anything, did he?
No, he did, yeah.
Does he know who you are?
He follows me on Twitter, actually.
Does he?
Has done for about 3 years now.
Well.
Asked me if I wanted a cup of tea yesterday.
Did he?
And I was like, he doesn't like you, Italia.
Sure. Doesn't like you though, Joe.
I think he doesn't. I think I introduced myself to him a few months ago, but I don't think he remembers me. Good podcast though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Should we have a break?
I think so.
All right.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Oh, what a lovely break that was. A very delightful break. Did you enjoy that break, Jampai?
I feel very well rested.
Refreshed and ready to discuss Portugal 3-2 Ghana. Let's start with you, Sam Tai. Cristiano Ronaldo, what was his performance like today? He's the hot talking point.
He wasn't great, in my opinion.
Okay.
To be honest with you, he's not really my kind of striker.
But he scored a goal and he's the best player in the world. What's wrong with you?
One of those statements is true, but yeah. He did score a goal, scored the opener, won a penalty. Not 100% convinced that that's a penalty, but that's by the by. Well, Ronaldo, it was a pretty typical Ronaldo performance based on what we've seen over the last couple of years. He was really not that involved in the game.
Yeah.
Of course, the trade-off there usually is that when the chances come, he takes them. But he missed a one-on-one. With a bad touch and a bad finish, and then he missed a free header, which was pretty egregious by his standards, wasn't it, really?
Yeah.
Got clean contact on it, amazing leap as usual,
sure,
but well off target. It was very strange. So
he also accidentally blocked someone's cross. That was, I don't think that was his fault, but it was funny.
Someone did, a cross was blocked by him as well. So it wasn't particularly great from him, and I'm not gonna sugarcoat it for him. Not that he really cares, but I don't think it was particularly great. Portugal were a bit flat overall anyway. They played very slowly, which doesn't really help an attacker find his rhythm.
Sure. Like,
he's not getting much of the ball anyway. And when the ball is coming, it's probably in bad areas, bad pace on the pass. A lot of what Portugal did was pretty slow in possession. What they did do was actually maintain territory really well in the first half, at least. They penned Ghana in really well and controlled their transition threat. So they didn't let Kudus spin out and run, and they didn't let Iñaki Williams run into the channels and chase any balls. They kept a cap on that really nicely. It did change in the second half as Ghana kind of kicked into gear. Again, to what Seb was saying, when they needed something, things started to change.
Mm.
But Ghana were very defensive there, but Portugal sort of controlled them quite nicely. but it just didn't really result in too many like shots or chances or anything like that.
Although, oddly enough, 5 goals in that game versus the rest of the day, which was fairly dry. Now, John, I asked you yesterday when we talked about Ronaldo as it relates to Manchester United, about Manchester United without him in, are they better? Lots of people say the same about Portugal. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think what's worth saying with Ronaldo is that we've seen him change the way that he's played over the years. So for in the past, he plays as a wide player predominantly, particularly on the left-hand side. And what would happen is that he would be playing behind, I'm just going to use João Félix here as a placeholder, but he would play behind a nine, and the nine would do nine things and would generate space in here for him to attack. And so he would be what we would call a box arriver. So he was really, really good at playing as a wide player, doing his thing against coming up against fullbacks, getting into wide areas, but also in these sorts of situations, being able to exploit the space that is created at the edge of the box.
Now, box arriving.
Box arriver, yeah. Mm. So what's happened is that it requires a huge amount of stamina and athleticism to be able to play this role. Now, people talk a lot about Ronaldo still having that athleticism, and it's true to a degree. I think he is, for his age, he is very athletic at certain things. But he's not athletic enough to play this sort of role anymore. So what's happened is that he's now been moved into this nine position, and he's been expected to do nine things.
Can I ask you, like, what? So we've heard from the, you know, the inside forward role, the wide role, running inside, box arriving, lots of running, lots of stamina. What are nine things? I mean, we talked about it a bit before with Richarlison, but just how different are those two roles? Because there's a certain, I don't know, when I think about playing FIFA, the video game, and I feel like a nine and an inside forward are interchangeable. I mean, how different are those two roles?
Yeah, I think they're very different insofar as we talked about with Richarlison for Brazil. What we're expecting is a player who's going to be a box presence, who's going to pin the centre-backs, as we call it, and do various. So in some situations, he's going to be expected to do, you know, first-time header when the ball's crossed in. But what's going to happen is that there's going to be certain situations where the wide player is going to get on the byline, going to look to try and play the ball back across the box. And you want your nine in these situations usually to hit the front post, pull the back line with them, and then generate that space there as well. Obviously, we've talked a lot in the last 10 years about false nines because that has been popularized in certain ways. But a lot of managers at the moment are preferring to just use an out-and-out nine because they are able to make the most of when the ball does arrive in the box, to score those goals when they come. Also help out with link-up play as well. And Ronaldo's link-up play, I think, has been less than helpful as well for Manchester United of late. And I think the same was true in this game for Portugal. So the big issue for me is that he's being expected now to play a role that doesn't suit him as much because his physicality has changed.
Yeah.
And so you're almost trying to force a square peg into a round hole just to get him into the team because you can't actually play him anywhere else.
Assuming you agree with John, what would be the benefits of him not being in the team, do you think? And obviously, we're all cognizant of the fact that he scored a goal today.
Yeah. I mean, just before we go there, just to add to what John's been saying as well, one of his issues that he's experiencing right now, and particularly when we're talking about that inside forward cutting in off the left, is that those players need to be able to generate a yard to shoot. They need to generate space for themselves to be able to get a clean shot off. And that comes from lateral agility. It comes from a sudden movement, a burst. And he wouldn't appreciate me drawing the comparison, but look at what Alejandro Garnacho is doing for Man United right now in the spot way that he can just go and generate like a yard or 2 yards or sometimes 3 yards, which gives him room to cross or to shoot or to dummy and put a player on the floor. Ronaldo at the moment, unfortunately, you know, being in his late 30s, he's just finding it really hard to find that burst, which allows him to generate that little bit of space you need for a clean shot. And you saw a couple of instances this evening where Ronaldo ends up on the left side of the box, just outside the 6 yard box. Yes, there's a lot of bodies in the way, probably shouldn't take the shot, but he always will. There's no space to take the shot. The shot is clearly going to be blocked by a defender's legs. He can't find a way around it.
It's worth saying as well that the penalty actually came from, I think it was it Salisu who was with him? So the ball, they're basically travelling in the diagonal direction across the box here, Ronaldo and Salisu side by side. And actually Ronaldo goes down under the little amount of pressure that he gets. But had he not done that and stayed on his feet, he wouldn't have been able to generate that space that would be needed for him to get ahead of Salisu to get the shot away. And so that's even the thing that he did well for Portugal, in scare quotes, was based around this idea that he actually wasn't able to generate separation between himself and the defender against him. So I think that was interesting as well.
They were stride for stride, weren't they, the whole time?
Yeah.
Do you remember a goal he scored against Roma in the Champions League a couple of years ago? He was still a Real Madrid player. And he drove in diagonally left to right towards the box, chopped inside his man, and then it's a little bit of bad goalkeeping, but the ball ends up in the top corner. I think it might even have been against Alisson when he was still a Roman player. Mm. But like, he did that so well. And it's not about, I always think that that's kind of misunderstood as an ability, because it's not about craft. It's not about knowing how to create that separation. It's having the agility to actually do it. Mm-hmm. And there's just no way around the fact that he's just getting older. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things you lose, the explosiveness, dynamism. And usually, like, that doesn't just mean, you know, how quick are you over 20, 30, 40 yards? It's in those little fractions when you're a penalty box player and you need the separation, the space to get the shot on the angle. And it's just, it's not quite there.
Yeah.
And it won't be again, because he's not going to get younger, obviously. Mm. That would be very weird.
Okay. We talked a lot about Ronaldo, the rest of Portugal's team. What do you make of him, Sam?
Well, I mean, they came to life a little bit later on, maybe thanks to the introduction of Rafael Leão, who's one of the most exciting players in the world. Yeah. So fair enough.
He's playing at Milan at the moment.
He's playing at AC Milan. But Portugal are pretty famous for being pretty stodgy, right? I mean, their coach is a very cautious man. Very cautious man. Doesn't like to play particularly enterprising football. It's been the big criticism of him, obviously. You've got all these talented players. Why don't you use them? Why don't you let them cook, as people would say?
And I'm starting to think that's a criticism of every kind of major nation international team coach. You hear the same thing about Gareth Southgate. We've said the same thing about Didier Deschamps.
Hammered with it for years.
A decade. Isn't it just how it works?
I mean, for the most part, the examples of teams playing reactively and winning on the international stage are much more plentiful than your Spain.
Sure.
And maybe Belgium have done it a bit recently, but they haven't had too much success.
Yeah.
Do you remember how criticized Wilmots used to be for his Belgium approach? Before he left and Martinez came in, he had all these attacking players. I mean, that's boring. It's boring.
If you think through the international managers at this World Cup, like, how many of them have actually been successful in domestic football? It's very low, because the two sports are almost entirely
Louis different. Van Gaal.
Yeah, so Louis Van Gaal is a good example. Luis Enrique, I think, is a good example.
Yeah.
Hansi Flick has had
success at Bayern, whatever that means. But Louis Van Gaal, I think, in many respects, he's like an older manager now. I think his ideas obviously were becoming a bit passé.
Yeah.
Certainly by the time he was at Manchester United. But then again, it's not entirely sure whether or not that's because he's at Manchester United.
Yeah.
But there's not very many managers who've played the elite style of football that we talk about a lot when we're talking about Premier League football.
Yes.
So
it used to be a conversation, didn't it? That particularly, I don't know, I can't speak for other countries, but in England, if a manager in Division One was doing particularly well, maybe they'd start to be spoken about for the England job. Mm. That just doesn't happen anymore, does it? I mean, like, it happened a bit with Jose Mourinho about 10 years ago. People talked about the idea that maybe he would take over. But have you ever heard anyone reference the idea of Pep Guardiola taking over?
This is because it used to be a reward, Joe. It used to be like, you get an international job as a reward for what you've done at the club level, whether that made sense technically or not. And now it's like,
is it a punishment?
Well, in some places, yeah. But
the top managers are not in the international game for the most part.
Yeah.
It's also,
and is that because of a stylistic difference? Or like, if you were to answer the question honestly, if Gareth Southgate was a club, a domestic manager, what level are we talking about?
He did manage it.
Sure. I mean now.
He would get a Premier League job, but then I think it's not just about coaching. It's also about how many days a year you coach and how involved you are and what kind of personality you have. Like,
surely that's why it's the bonus.
Well, no, because if you're someone like Pep Guardiola, who wants to be seen as a high priest of the game, do you want to be relevant for an international break or a World Cup or every 2 years in a tournament cycle? Because you just don't get the same level of reverence from international football.
It's also less intellectually stimulating.
Of course.
Right? Essentially, what you're expected to do is just structure your team fairly well, recognize that you're not going to be able to do anything particularly smart in possession. You're not going to be particularly dynamic out of possession. And it's all about, one, managing all of the players that you have in your squad and obviously not like bringing them together every 3 months or however long it takes before you've got another game, and being able to manage that aspect of it. So it's very hard to sort of analyze what is and isn't good at this level, because it's just so completely different from what the domestic managers have the time and space to do. It's funny, because we talk about domestic managers not having the time to implement their ideas because they only have like two training sessions a week, whereas these guys get, you know, two training sessions every 2 or 3 months. So it's very much about being, it's about being basic, having a decent structure, which everyone sort of knows, and then relying on your talent to produce moments.
Yeah. Okay. I was listening to you, but I was also laughing at the chat. I believe one of our kind commenters complimented the TIFO staff member who was moderating the chat at the moment, said what a good job they were doing, and Craig promptly deleted it and banned them for 6 minutes. Oh, it's Henry. It's TIFO staff member Henry. There we go. Henry lurking at home, watching his flatmate John McKenzie on the screen. He can't get enough of you, can
he? I'll have stern words with him later.
Stern words indeed. Well, we've spoken for a long time about whatever it was that we were just talking about. Let's discuss Ghana. Did we do Ghana already?
No, we did not.
No. Tell me a little bit about Ghana, Seb. Nobody apart from me, I will say, predicted them to score yesterday, but they did. They scored twice.
Yeah, they did. I think part of it is because this is not a gold generation for Ghanaian football. They had a really poor AFCON. Also, their high point in the World Cup was clearly 2010 when Uruguay and Luis Suarez happened. And this team is probably not as talented, and it lacks goals. Its fundamental parts, so players like Andre Ayew and Jordan Ayew, they're older. Some people still argue whether they're both worthy of a place in the squad. But if you actually looked at their I forget whether it was actually a 50-man squad or a 36. If you looked at the players who were called up to that group, there are a couple of Zweite Bundesliga players in there. Ranzi Königsdorfer was from HSV was in that group, and it just looked a little bit weak. They still got world-class players in a couple of positions, but it's not as defensively resilient as the 2010 team was. That was a very organized, very disciplined, structured side, but it had these kind of flourishes of personality at the top of the pitch. Which made it very, very interesting.
The chat asking us to talk about Mohamed Kudus.
Yeah, I'm still undecided on him. I like watching him play. I don't know what that means about how good he is. I just haven't seen enough of him. Skillful, definitely. Mm-hmm. Very nearly played for Everton. Very nearly signed for Everton over the summer. Right. Not quite sure why that didn't get done, but they came close.
Ajax came to their senses?
Maybe. Or I think he's probably due a move, if and when he does move, to a slightly higher level of the game, just because he's clearly very talented.
But back in the summer, he was not in this Ajax context and the setup, was it? He didn't play that much last year, and he was probably worried he wasn't going to play much this year. He's broken into the team since then.
Have you watched much of him this year?
I've watched a bit, yeah.
Okay, what have you made of him?
I like him, but he plays striker and he hates it. He keeps complaining. He's like, I don't like playing striker. It's like, dude, he's got like 10 goals.
He's definitely not false nine. Like he's obviously not a number nine. He's not false nine. To me, he's that kind of... He's a roaming eight.
And he's great at carrying the ball. Yeah. He's great when the space to move into. He's great when the game is in transition, and he's one of their biggest threats if they can get him going in that transition phase, for sure. He's very technically talented, very, very good.
I would.
He's quite unique, I'd say, in a Ghana context for the most part.
One of the players that I like in their squad, who I think he'd work quite nicely with, is Kofi Kare, who's now at Freiburg, John's Freiburg. He was at St. Pauli last season.
He's at John's Freiburg. Is that different to Freiburg?
No, that is.
John has his own Freiburg.
It's like Frank Lampard's Derby. That's what I've done there.
Wow.
He's a wonderfully gifted player, but he's got a really nice story attached to him. He's now played and scored in the top four levels of German football. And he's just this wonderfully crafty. I suppose you might call him, he plays a wide forward, as an attacking midfielder, as a shadow forward. He does a lot of things really well. Lovely passing range. Great goal celebration, if you get to see that. Does this fabulous kind of backwards somersault corkscrew thing.
Better than the second goal we saw today?
Yeah, much better. Much more artistic. We'll probably get to that. But I'd like to see him in there just to give Ghana a little bit more attacking craft, because I think that's what they were lacking. Although I suppose we should probably talk about game state again, because once they needed goals, all of a sudden a different Ghana emerged and they looked quite 100%. Dangerous.
I think on the squad thing, like, it does feel, I'm looking at it here in front of me, and it does kind of like feel a bit thrown together.
Yeah, it does.
And like, yeah, you've even got like, so we've got the 11 mapped out, but Tarik Lamptey did not start this game. Like, obviously he's coming at right back. They were trying to convince Eddie Nketiah to come and play for them. They did manage to convert a few. Inyaki Williams up front is a new recruit. Salisu has only just committed to play for the national team.
Wanted Hudson-Odoi as well.
And yeah, and it's like, it's definitely a team with three or four very, very new faces who have four or fewer caps. Now heading into a tournament, that makes me a bit uneasy sometimes. And like, we're all searching for this familiarity on the international stage. We've touched on how little contact time these coaches have with these teams. Seb's talked about how getting domestic pairs, you know, club pairs are so useful for that. It's almost cheating on the chemistry. Ghana have nothing. They have no one. They have the Ayew brothers that they've had for 12 years. But apart from that, they're really struggling to form the connections, the familiarity. And I think you can see that in the way that they play sometimes and when they try to open out. And I think you can see it in the way they set up as well.
I think over the next 5 years, Ghana is going to be quite interesting, because if you look at some of the players who they've recruited, there's some real talent there. It's just a bit underrealized. Like, talked about Ramsey Königsdorfer, but Stephen Ambrosius is another one, like potentially a really good right back, center back of the future. These are young players who have no experience of international football at all, who in some cases are still not playing in the top tier in their sort of in their clubs' nations. So there's a nice big pool of talent which over time can develop from the kind of, can benefit from the kind of experiences that Sam's talking about, whether it be going to AFCONs or World Cups or whether it's just qualifying tournaments. Mm. Like, it's an interesting group. It's not reliant on any individual in the way that maybe past generations were. Asamoah Gyan, for instance, was super important to Ghana for a really long time. Mm. And rightly, he was great. But very interesting little parts. It's just come a little bit earlier in the cycle, I think, this tournament.
Yeah. Okay. Well, listen, before we move on to talk about Switzerland and Cameroon after a break, I just want to present you with a gift, Sam Tai. And the gift is this. It's How to Watch Football. The gift, just to be clear, is a plug for our book and a book, a free book. Now, we gave this to you earlier, didn't we? And then I told you I'd give it to you again on the podcast. And you said some wonderful things about it earlier. What did you say? And would you like to tell the audience about that again?
I said that it looks beautifully written.
Oh, yes.
It's got lots of pictures in it, yes. Which is good for me.
Note how he didn't say the pictures were beautiful.
Oh. We'll tell Alice. We'll tell Sister Alice about that.
Yeah. The pictures are also beautiful.
Yeah, yeah. What else is beautiful about the book?
It's size.
Yes, it fits in a stocking, doesn't it?
It fits in a stocking.
It does fit in. And guess what's coming around the corner?
You could wrap this.
Thanksgiving.
Oh, Thanksgiving's today.
Yeah, Thanksgiving's today.
It is today.
It's in a turkey.
It is now.
Yeah. Oh, well, happy Thanksgiving to those of you
after
who celebrate
a
holiday.
Lot of food. Yeah. Instead of watching American football, you can read about how to watch football.
Well, indeed.
Football.
And of course, you know, all holidays are welcome here. It needn't be Christmas, but any holiday where there's a commercial element to it. those holidays where we've
typically
all
of them
giving,
these days. Yes.
Giving. Yes. That's it. Giving.
Valentine's Day.
For your football friendly lover,
for someone you love,
a
quite
birthday.
A lot.
Yeah. But of course, listen. How to Watch Football available in Sam's hand, but also available online. And I should say, if you're in the UK or wherever they have Waterstones, it's available a lot of till size at Waterstones as well. Head into your local Waterstones to find How to Watch Football.
Went into one of my local Waterstones earlier today and just stood by our book.
Did you?
That was a fun experience.
Were you hoping to be recognised?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Oh, were you also talking over the end of my plug when you were doing that? Or
yeah,
was that
but
just
I felt like it was worth it because it was part of the book plug. I was just helping to sustain your plug.
It's funny, isn't it? 6 years of podcasts and you still don't know how to do them.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's have a break and we'll be back after this.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
DirecTV gives you access to apps like Netflix and live sports right next to each other.
I don't get it.
Let me put it in pigeon terms. It's like that one amazing dumpster with the old fruit and cardboard all in one place.
How am I supposed to keep up with illustrative metaphors when you are making me so hungry?
Get live TV and streaming apps together without a satellite. Visit DirecTV.com. Requires high-speed internet-connected Gemini device and separate paid subscription to watch Netflix on DirecTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
What a delightful break. Everyone had a lovely time here. But of course, there's still more football to discuss. Switzerland won. Nil Cameroon, John. Not John. Sam, you watched this game closely, you said. And also, you rate Switzerland quite highly. This is Switzerland and Cameroon in the group with Brazil-Serbia. You think Switzerland going out of the group ahead, progressing through the group ahead of Serbia, you also think they might go quite deep.
Yeah. So, John, could you do me a favor? Could you set these teams up on the board while I justify my madness? Because in my bracket, I accidentally put Switzerland to go through to the final of the World Cup.
Right. Now, by accident or on purpose?
It's not like I set out to do it, which is why it's an accident, but it did happen.
Yeah.
I can't deny that.
Sure.
Obviously, we respect the power of the bracket.
Mm-hmm.
You don't redo the bracket.
No.
Gut feeling is everything in football. And it turns out Switzerland are in the final this year. So look forward to that.
Who are they facing?
Argentina, apparently.
Oh.
So
who did they knock out on the way?
So I think they came second in the group, which led them to Uruguay or Portugal. It doesn't matter. They're going to beat them. They're going to beat either of them. And then they met Spain in the quarterfinals, and I just happened to remember that they've got a pretty rich recent history of beating Spain.
They do
it like quite regularly. About as often as some people go to the gym.
Sure.
Once every year and a half.
Never.
So that means that they meet France in the semis. They just beat France in the Euros.
Yeah.
So I thought, hang on a minute, they're going all the way through. But look, I mean, I love going against the grain.
Why you've chosen to wear these clothes, is it? Or is that...
No.
Oh, sorry. I just thought it was...
Nothing to do with that. There's nothing wrong with
my... I'm trying to spread it around Seb doesn't feel so bad.
Stand up for yourself.
That's
true. If you let him in, I won't let you go.
I was also trying to highlight Sam's Ranks FC badge there.
Oh,
of course,
I see. Yeah.
Which is from the Ranks FC podcast.
Nice. Correct.
You can find online.
Yes, any podcast provider, Ranks FC, search it. Lovely stuff. Anywho... Switzerland, pretty good, pretty annoying to play against, which is not really what you want in a tournament setup. Just like one of the, when you draw them and you go, oh, do we have to play against them?
Mm.
It's kind of how I feel about Wales from an England perspective.
Sure.
Do we have to play against them?
100%.
Because they will work even harder than usual to beat us. And I feel like Switzerland have got that vibe to them. But generally a very solid tournament side.
Okay.
And to be honest with you, the first match round has only emboldened me here because some weird things have happened. But they played Cameroon today, and they were pretty good. I mean, this is a good game. Like the great thing about this game, and it kind of makes it almost unique in this first round of matches context, is that for roughly 20 minutes each, they dominated each other.
Oh.
Yeah, whereas usually it's just absolute randomness, or one team is laying siege on the other. We saw quite a lot of that today. But here,
they took it in turns.
Switzerland started first 20 minutes, fantastic. Then they let Cameroon have a go.
Oh,
how very nice of them.
That is nice.
Cameroon, 20 minutes, brilliant. Gets first kick after half time, Switzerland back on it. Cameroon go, you enjoy the ball, lads. It was great, honestly. Switzerland won 1-0. They managed to put one move together.
Right.
But one of the genuinely interesting things was they played like a 4-3-3.
Mm-hmm.
I know that we're now no longer expecting Granit Xhaka to be a deep line midfielder. He's now moved into a kind of box to box role for Arsenal, and he's been fantastic. But his positioning in this game was beyond anything I think I've seen, really. He was generally floating as the furthest forward of the three midfielders. He was standing between the lines almost the entire time when his team had the ball. Freuler was at the base dictating things. Gibraltar was just kind of distracting people on the right, and Xhaka was between the lines. Then Mbolo, the central striker, was making like dropping runs, like false nine runs, and trying to pull the centre backs out with him. And then Xhaka was making number nine runs over the shoulder. So Xhaka is now a striker. We're going to have to deal with that.
He's scored a number of goals for Arsenal this season already, hasn't he, I suppose?
He has done. I mean, he gets into the box loads for Arsenal, but I don't tend to see him running beyond the furthest man. Like he's crashing into the box. He's a box arriver or whatever that term was.
I think someone in the chat pointed out that John Miller likes to call it a box crasher.
He certainly crashes the box.
Mm.
Certainly. But we're so used to seeing Xhaka over the years get his foot on the ball in deeper areas, try to dictate things. He's not even remotely trying to do that anymore, not even slightly. He's leaving that to Freuler. He's leaving that to Sal. And Bola's dropping all the way in, and Xhaka's moving into the space. Now, this was really hard for Cameroon to deal with. And Castelletto, the right centre-back, actually did an amazing job for the most part of just trying to keep a lid on it.
Yeah.
But eventually there was a goal. And Kulu didn't fare so well on the left-hand side. But Xhaka's off the ball runs and positioning between the lines, it kind of shocked me a little bit.
I guess Cameroon wouldn't have expected it either.
No, probably not.
Mm.
Probably not.
Okay.
Another thing that I noticed is that they were using cutbacks as a dangerous way of causing problems. So what we saw a couple of times, so the goal came from a cutback itself. But there was another chance that fell to Vargas as well that came from a cutback. But what we were seeing is the wide player getting into the byline here on the corner of the penalty box and playing a ball basically on this line. So this is a line from the byline to the far side corner on the other side of the penalty box.
A long diagonal line across the penalty box.
That's right. That's right. So the ball is here.
In other words, a cutback.
Yeah, a cutback from this sort of area. And what we would see is we would see one of the players dragging the back line back. So we talk about pinning a bit. So this player comes in, and that means that the whole of the defensive line has to drop back in. And this leaves space, as we've been saying a lot in this episode. But Mbolo was here for the first goal and finished. That was the goal. But what we also had was we had players coming in on the back of this line as well. So right at the far end of the box. So if Mbolo misses the ball or leaves the ball as a dummy to pull this player in, it can then come to this player as well, something that they've obviously been working on. And there was another example later on, actually, of Vargas missing a fairly easy chance in the same sort of situation as well. So Switzerland have clearly been working on that one too. So hit the byline, play the cutback, and you have players in the right place to cause problems.
It did look very well orchestrated. And Sylvain Vidma, the right back, was brilliant.
Okay,
it's the first time I've seen him play well.
Right.
So it was a great day for everyone.
Well, very exciting. I mean, it's a very tough group, isn't it? We asked before, for Serbia, of course, Brazil's their toughest game. For Brazil, Sam, is Serbia their toughest game, or are they going to, you know, by the sounds of it, Switzerland are going to give them a tough game also?
Well, these two teams played very well today, like against each other. They felt quite well matched. And the swings in terms of momentum and periods of control kind of confirmed that. They felt like a good match for one another. But I think Switzerland will be Brazil's toughest game. Definitely. They may not play as expansively as they did against Cameroon, but they have traditionally been extremely difficult to play against. And I'm pretty sure they've still got that in them. So Switzerland, with the experience, the kind of tournament know-how that we've kind of touched on and how certain teams lack it, you know Switzerland have it. I think Serbia moved into the category of overhyped just before this tournament started. I think that's probably fair to say. Not just because of the injuries that they're actually carrying, but kind of one of those teams that on paper it looks awesome and it doesn't necessarily come true. A bit like Poland.
I can't believe you're calling Serbia overhyped when you said Switzerland are going to get to the final.
it's possible that Switzerland are also being overhyped from this general direction. But I do think the Swiss stand up as the second strongest team in this group, and nothing I've seen today has changed my mind there.
Switzerland just have to win against Serbia in their three, basically.
That's the thing. From a Cameroon perspective, Seb, now, would you have said that they probably needed to get something out of this game if they were going to consider progressing? Or
yeah, definitely. Definitely. This was the game that they had to not lose, basically. I think they could have got away with. It's interesting because it's the kind of group where you could imagine the final match day pitting, having three teams on equal points and it being one of those on the final day. But Cameroon are now, I don't know, I don't think that Cameroon have the tools to dig themselves out of the hole they're in at the moment. So yes.
Okay, fine. Well, let's move on now to talk about Korea Republic 0-0 Uruguay. Anything to say, John?
Not a lot. Uruguay, I thought, were quite passive. Considering when you look at their team sheet, they've actually got decent names on there.
Yeah.
But we were talking a lot about this during the game, but Uruguay seemed to come into these games without a huge attempt to really cause the opposition problems, at least in the attacking third. So, it was very much a case of South Korea, Korea Republic, allowing them to have the ball at the back, funneling them wide and making sure that they weren't causing them any problems in the box. And I think that, it's a nil-nil draw. No one likes talking about them, but...
Yeah. You seem to love talking about them. You make videos about nil-nil draws all the time, John.
There was that period where every video he got tasked with ended with a nil-nil
draw. That was funny, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And every video JJ got was like 6-3, 4-5.
Man United lose to...
Yeah. But you know what? Of all the people I know who could draw something, you know, interesting and watchable out of a nil-nil draw, it's Sam Tai. But second place,
JJ Ball.
Would be you. JJ Ball, maybe third place.
That JJ Ball's talented.
JJ needs goals, otherwise he's all at sea. Hey? There we go. Anyway, before we go on to play Points Are Bad, let's make use of Sam Tai, Jam Pai, right here. I've got a few questions to ask you about the tournament more generally. And Seb and John, feel free to pitch in too. What do you think about England? Because, of course, they play the USA tomorrow, and this is an Anglo-centric podcast.
Yeah, I mean, can't not be happy with the opening result, right? And it sure. just it felt like it just got better and better as the tournament wore on, because the "it's only Iran" comments were sort of eradicated and demystified pretty fast, because actually it turns out playing World Cup football is really hard.
Yeah.
Getting off to a good start, scoring lots of goals, getting lots of players into the rhythm, very hard. We've done it. Like, right. not only have we battered Iran and the confidence is very high, but you're bringing players off the bench and they're all scoring. Everyone yeah. feels part of this.
So presumably we're going to mess it up tomorrow then?
I seriously hope not.
No.
For ranks, it would be a disaster. A lot of US listeners, it's a bit of a local derby. We're on the chopping block. Yeah. We're in like big trouble if England don't beat the USA on Friday. But I mean, like, you can't really be mad at, like, what, Spain and France have looked better. Mm-hmm. But of course, pinch of salt with Spain. They're against the worst team in the tournament by far. And France, yeah, again, the same thing. So very, very happy. Very optimistic.
Well, Rooney!
Oh, there he goes.
What you're supposed to do at this point.
That's what JJ Bull would do if he was here. Yeah. Very exciting. Yeah, that was
good, wasn't it?
Yeah. That's, it sort of shocked me a bit.
That did it?
Yeah. It did.
Because it also sounded strange, like a threat. Like JJ makes it sound kind of jovial and fun. That felt like something was wrong.
Yeah. It cut through me a little bit.
I didn't really know how to respond.
No, okay. No. Well, I think we should just move on and not acknowledge it anymore. What are your favourites? Who were your favourites, I should say, for the tournament so far?
Switzerland,
of course. We've already touched on that one, haven't we? John, we haven't asked you who your favourite is.
For the tournament?
Yeah.
Brazil.
I mean, I went Argentina before the tournament.
He said that like, you know.
Well, it's a knockout tournament.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Things happen. And things will happen. So it's almost not worth talking about.
Well, I didn't say who's going to win. I said, who are your favourites?
The team that I like the most.
I don't know. That's you interpret different. The question however you want. You're
no,
in charge.
To.
As soon as
You're
I
host,
finish
you
talking, you get to interpret whatever I say in whatever direction.
I can't even
you
remember who's playing in the World Cup. Let me just refer to my.
Who's your favourite?
France. When I was pretty impressed by Tchouaméni. That was the one doubt I had over France.
Right.
How's that midfield going to look? And he played really, really well against Australia. Yeah. And so the rest of the team kind of speaks for itself.
Okay.
And everyone's been saying there's Tchouaméni games in a day.
So
if I put that on Twitter, that's 12,000 likes.
Don't worry, I'll hack your Twitter again tomorrow. You'll get more likes. Producer Craig, who's your favourite for the tournament?
Mexico.
He says Mexico. There we go. I like Mexico too. Very exciting team.
He spores on about Mexico all day. Doesn't
he's always crazy. Talking about Mexico.
Shut up about Mexican football, Craig.
All right, fine. Biggest tactical surprise for you so far in the tournament, Sam Tai?
Yeah, probably that so many of the quote-unquote minnows or smaller sides or maybe weaker sides have been so incredibly aggressive and bold and really gone for it.
Yeah.
And the good thing is that they've reaped the rewards. So it's positive reinforcement.
Sure.
Everybody else should do it. Anyone who has sat in the low block and defended and been passive has been hurt and they've been punished. And like, look, Iran, terrible. Costa Rica, terrible. Wales first half, terrible. As soon as they try to attack, bang, you've got USA on the back foot. All of the other teams that you may expect to follow suit, we're talking about Tunisia there, teams like that, they've been really bold. Morocco too.
Saudi Arabia.
All of the upsets have been teams with smart off-the-ball systems that have a clear plan of how they're going to come up against the opponents they're playing.
And almost as though it's not random.
Yeah. And they've obviously had a degree of luck at times, because you need to be if you're going to beat a favourite, but they've also done everything in their power to keep the game within enough touching distance that the goals that they score are enough to win it. So
100%. Yeah. I just think the response to that is usually that they just sit in, and actually it turns out they've been really bold, really aggressive, really brave. And it's been great to watch genuinely, because it's made for some really good games. Mm-hmm. That Tunisia performance is my favorite of the entire first round outside of England's, because I just did not expect it.
They were nasty in a good way. They were physical.
Their midfielder Naiduni is awesome. I'd never really seen him play before. He plays in Hungary. How am I supposed to watch that?
Mm.
I'm discovering players. I'm loving it. It's brilliant.
Oh, good. Josh Shepherd in the chat says that name puns are the lowest form of comedy, John. Do better.
Well,
I bet he's feeling a bit sheepish now, isn't he?
Oh.
Sam in the chat says, if producer Craig didn't give a clear answer, he'd be producer vague.
Good Lord. Okay.
Points are bad?
No.
Points
one final
bad.
Question.
Puns are bad,
listen,
more like.
Listen,
am I right?
As soon as
am
he
right?
read out
am
something
right?
from the chat, you started to read out something from the chat, then you tried to move me on.
If you acknowledge Craig, the chat, they become uncontrollable.
This is what happens. I've lost control of the podcast.
And the chat. The chat is uncontrollable.
I've never had control of the chat. Sam Tai, one final question for you. And you've done your brackets,
yes.
So you will know the
Respect
answer
the
to this. The matchup you'd most like to see, and it can't include Switzerland.
Oh, I don't know the rest of the bracket.
You don't. It doesn't have to be a realistic one. It doesn't have to be one that could take place technically. Mm. But of the teams you've seen so far, and you made the point when we started the podcast that we've now seen all of the teams play their opening game. Which two of these teams would you love to see together in the final?
I would like to see Spain play a team that get anywhere near them, just to see how fluid this stuff is.
Yeah.
I'll go with England because obviously I'd like to see us tested in that way. I would like to see us play Spain. Yeah. But really anybody who applies any pressure to any of their players would be great. Because then I can get a real gauge of who the actual favourite is.
And do you think England-Spain, could it be something along the lines of the 2009 and 2011 Champions League finals between Man United and Barcelona? Or are we not there? Is the degree of separation not such?
Oh, no, it's not there. No. Okay. We're not as helpless as Man United looks.
They just scored England 7 goals.
England are a good team. I don't think they're going to win the World Cup, but they're a good team. They're not a no-hoper.
They're not a no-hoper.
No, but they're not.
England.
Yeah. I feel like we've been conditioned to think this way in this country.
Yeah, it's really hard to get over this.
It's true. If the English are conditioned to think of themselves as worse than they are, if we've learned anything from history, it's that. It's ridiculous.
In a football context, that's my revenge for that. Right, okay. Take your context provision, you know. It feels like the right thing is always to be really, really negative about England until you reach a point of critical mass, at which point everyone becomes ridiculously arrogant and obnoxious and assumes victory is imminent. The trick is just balancing it a little bit. Yep. They're a good side. Mm. They're a good side, yeah. They're a difficult side to beat, England, I think. And that will be, they'll get beaten probably by the at least one of the teams that sort of goes really, really deep into the tournament.
Yeah.
But maybe France-Spain is the matchup there, like the physicality and the threat that they can provide Spain going the other way, keep them a bit more honest.
I do feel as though England didn't have to do a lot for their win against Iran. And I think when Spain didn't have to do a huge amount for their win against Costa Rica, but I think there's been some teams who you can see that they are doing that all of the phases of the game, they're playing quite well. Whereas I feel with England, they scored a couple of low value chances early on that settled things down. Iran were obviously the context there was Iran had made a protest that was obviously deeply unsettling for their players. And I think once England got that momentum, they were always going to win that game. The big question is going to be, as I've said, like in the knockout stages, what happens when you come up against teams who actually have more of a plan against you? How are you going to overcome that? And I don't think we can say on the basis of that Iran game that England necessarily going to have that. Whereas I think I mentioned Germany before, like Germany in the first half,
Germany-Spain is interesting. Like everyone's kind of written Germany off. Germany-Spain is interesting because they will put the pressure on Spain that we've been talking about.
Yeah. Well, listen, speaking of pressure, please put your earphones back on now as we move on to the final section of the TIFO Football Podcast. And we're all going to listen to a nice little bit of music and then play a game. Isn't that right, producer Don? Look at that. Wow.
I wasn't expecting that.
Producer Don there.
Rooney!
Remixing.
Producer Don and producer Craig have remixed the video too.
Well, that's nice. Yeah, thanks, guys.
That was great.
A sweet World Cup surprise. But it's time for Points Are Bad. Now, let me tell you that unfortunately, the man who isn't here today, JJ Bull, has had a rather exceptional day. I think it might be the best day ever in the history of Points Are Bad. Because JJ Bull today, predicting for 4 games, only added 3 points, which is, I mean, that is phenomenal, isn't it? 2 correct outcomes altogether, I think, adding 1 and 2 points in the other 2 games. It's been a less stellar day for the rest of us. John, you did quite well. You came second with 8 points for today. Still quite far off 3, though. And Seb, you did 9. I did 11. Right, we'll come back to the grand total overall a little bit later. And Samtai, you'll have to indulge us for the next couple of minutes as
I've
we predict.
0 points.
You have 0. You're currently leading the way. That's absolutely right. The best way of playing points are bad is not to play. Now, Wales, Iran. Let's begin there. And of course, JJ goes last because he got an ungodly number of points. I go first. So for Wales, Iran, I think I'm going to predict quite a sort of stodgy affair. I'm going to go for a 1-1 with Wales going into that final game really needing something out of it. Wales, Iran, Seb Staffordblaw.
2-0 Wales.
You're going to go for a 2-0 Wales?
Yes.
Okay, that works for me. No, not 0-20. That's wrong.
Should be doing the Athletics live blog for this game.
Are you?
To join me for that.
Okay, yeah. Well, that's exciting.
It'll be fun.
John, you're next.
I will go 1-0 Iran.
1-0 Iran. Okay, that's a 0-1. Now, JJ's first prediction was 0-0. So we'll give that to JJ. Qatar, Senegal. I think Senegal are going to win this game. But I think Qatar are going to score.
As I said, though, you're not betting on the result. You're betting on how many goals you think both teams.
Well, indeed. And just sometimes the number of goals that teams score happen to also include a result. I'm going to go for a 2-1 win to Senegal there. Qatar, Senegal, Seb Staffordblaw?
3-0 Senegal.
3-0 Senegal. Okay. John McKenzie?
Do I go big?
Or do you go home? That is a good question.
You said 2-1, didn't you?
I said 2-1. Seb said 3-0.
I'll go 3-1.
You're going to go 3-1 to Senegal. 1-3. Okay. Well, JJ's first request here was 0-3, which has been taken by Seb. There was a 4-0. So JJ's gone fairly big for that game.
I thought he would go high, so I thought I'd have to go lower. But then 3-1 isn't much lower, is it? So.
Netherlands-Ecuador. This is a fairly difficult one to predict, I think. I'm going to go for a 2-1 win to the Netherlands. Seb Staffordblaw?
Oh, I'm going to go 2-1 Ecuador.
You're going to go 1-2. Okay. John?
I'll go 3-0 Netherlands.
3-0 Netherlands. And JJ Ball's first request here was 2-0, which he can have. Okay. And England, USA. Oh. I think we're going to hammer them.
Oh, don't you do this every time?
I know.
You get overexcited.
It kind of worked last year, didn't it?
It did actually.
Did it also work against Iran?
Yes, I said 5-0.
Wow. Yeah.
So I'm going to say 3-1 in this game. That's not hammering in terms of the result, but hammering in terms of the performance. And what I say is irrelevant because I'm losing the game. What do you think, Seb?
I think 2-0 England.
You think 2-0 England, a much more sensible suggestion, John McKenzie?
I said England would win last time, and I still feel bad about saying that.
Right.
But I'm going to do it again. I'm going to go 3-0.
He loves to feel bad. That's a 3-0 there.
Has JJ predicted like a 5-0 USA?
He'll do 1-0.
JJ has predicted 2-0, which has been taken by Seb. He's predicted 3-1, which has been taken by me. And his next prediction is 2-1, which actually sounds pretty accurate, doesn't it? Now we've said it all out. There we go. So those are the predictions for the games tomorrow. I can tell you now the grand totals for us so far. JJ Bull re-entering the lead. John, you took it off him yesterday when you weren't here, but you've lost it again in magnificent apparel. 34, JJ leading the way. 38, you're following. Not far off. 4 points. That could be won tomorrow. And now bear in mind, the gap is 4. You need to have your predictions separate enough. So next time you're both here and he goes first, you know, you can make a prediction there. 43 for Seb Staffordblaw. You're having a rotten one because you're only 2 ahead of me on 45. And I'm bad. Yeah? So are points. Points are bad. That's points are bad done. And I think that's the podcast done. Sam Tai of Ranks FC Podcast, thank you very much for joining us this evening. It's been a pleasure to have Sam, hasn't it?
Sure has.
Yeah.
Old days. It's been fun.
Old days. That's his nickname.
Of course it was. No, because we
Jam Pie,
we
old
used to
days.
Podcast with Sam a long time ago.
Yes, we did.
We used to in the UMAXIT days.
That's right.
Founded this company, that's right.
Yeah. There he goes, yeah. Staking his claim. Yeah. Left at the wrong time, though. Anyway, it's John McKenzie joining at the right time. Hey, John McKenzie, I hope you enjoyed yourself today.
Thanks, slow decline.
Slow decline. That's going to stick around, isn't it? Yeah. And Sebastian Staffordblaw, I hope you get some sleep.
I shall indeed get
yes,
some sleep.
Yes, you will.
Yes.
Thanks as usual to producers Craig and Don. And we will be back tomorrow with more.